Thus begins the reading from 2 Samuel chapter 6. As the ark of the Lord entered the city of David, Michal, the daughter of Saul, looked down from her window. When she saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord, she was filled with contempt for him. They brought the ark of the Lord and set it in its place inside the special tent David prepared for it. And David sacrificed the burnt offerings and peace offerings to the Lord. When he had finished his sacrifices, David blessed the people in the name of the Lord of Heaven's armies. Then he gave to every Israelite man and woman in the crowd a loaf of bread, a cake of dates, and a cake of raisins. Then all the people returned to their homes. When David returned home to bless his own family, Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet him. She said in disgust, "How distinguished the king of Israel looked today, shamelessly exposing himself to the servant girls like any vulgar person might do." David retorted to Michal, "I was dancing before the Lord who chose me above your father and all his family. He appointed me as the leader of Israel, the people of the Lord, so I celebrate before the Lord. Yes, and I am willing to look even more foolish than this, even to be humiliated in my own eyes, but those servant girls you mentioned will indeed think I am distinguished."
W.H. Auden wrote, "I know nothing except for what everybody knows. When grace dances, I should dance." It's clear that David knew that good truth, but I'm going to have to disagree with Auden because not everyone seems to know how important dancing can be. For instance, did you know that up until 1995, dancing was forbidden at Baylor? We changed that on our 150th anniversary. And the president at the time sponsored a big dance on Fifth Street. It was amazing. Centuries and centuries before Baylor's first dance, King David danced. When he finally got to Jerusalem with the Ark of the Covenant, we've not heard about the Ark yet in our chapel, but the Ark of the Covenant was this beautiful, holy, sacred box designed actually by God. And it goes with Israel in those days where they're wandering everywhere. It goes way back, and they would always reverently worship before it. It led them into battle. It was a very big deal. It contained the Ten Commandments, and no, they understood it to contain God's presence. In many ways, for these people, it carried God. God, for our sakes, condensed the divine presence, the divine truth for a time. We all begin our journeys, in fact, right there, with this container of truth. For God's ancient people, the Ark of the Covenant contained God's glory, and they had lost the Ark along the way. They lost it after a battle, and they had never stopped grieving. So when young King David, when he found out where it was, he knew how important it was to go and get it and to bring it back to God's people. He was a new king, and the Ark was immensely important militarily and politically. Most of all, it was very important spiritually. To bring it to Jerusalem for them was to usher the presence of God into their city, into their midst. It was an awesome and reverent thing. So much so that while they were getting it into the city, they wouldn't even touch it with their hands. Moving it to Jerusalem was wonderful, but a little bit dangerous too. Every few steps, they had this sort of holy fear about it. They would stop and they would pray and they'd make a sacrifice, trying to show God how much they reverenced the Ark. When they finally got it to Jerusalem, well, David is just beside himself. And he's out in front of the Ark and he's dancing. He's lost in this celebration that the presence of God is with them in this way. And what's more, the great King David, he's not dancing there in his regal, restrictive robes. He actually takes them off so that he is dancing in his linen ephod. He's in his underwear. Ancient Middle Eastern tidy-whities. And as the music plays and the joy just explodes, he is dancing out in front of the Ark. He's not simply beside himself with joy. He really is, and I think you understand this moment, he really is beyond himself with joy, completely lost in the goodness of this moment, filled with the exuberance for God and that God was with them. He's in the street dancing. The writer of the text says, dancing with all his might. With everything that he's got, David is dancing before the Lord. And so that just seems right to us, right? Regardless of what all those old Baptists thought, I know nothing except what everyone just knows. When Grace dances, I should dance too. David knew that, but not everyone does. Eventually, after David gives everyone in town some cake to take home so that they can continue the celebration, David has to go home, and you can imagine that he's on cloud nine. He's still singing and dancing just a little bit. And when he gets home, his wife, Michal, or let's call her Michal, meets him at the door. And she's more than mad. You heard it in the text, the kind of sarcasm that was there. She had been watching him from the window. And here's a loose translation of what she says. Way to go, Dave. You really distinguished yourself as king today, dancing out there in front of everyone half naked. I'm embarrassed to be your first lady. That's Michal. That's Michal's spirit. It'll help you a little bit to know her story, which always helps, doesn't it, to know somebody's story. She was King Saul's daughter. Saul was the first king of Israel, David's predecessor. And early on, David had actually courted the daughter, Michal. It seems probably for political reasons. He basically traded for her, sending the father, Saul, 200 Philistine foreskins. Michal's father basically sold her to David, even though she was in love with somebody else at the time. It was for sure the way of the day, I know that. But imagine the pain and impact. It helps to know the story. But somehow, she wound up actually, as things worked out, back with her true and first love. But then here's what happened. When David finally becomes king, he gets strategic in his thinking, and he just sent for her to seal the royal deal, even though he had other wives and she had someone else. He took her for his political needs. So yes, Michal's a little bit bitter, and she's living this life in bitterness, and I want you to take note of that. She's holding on to something that she's now living from. The pain in her past has everything to do with how she's seeing the present. And that pain is keeping her from the celebration that everybody else is a part of. She's in the window, critiquing. She's judging. David's in the street, and he's celebrating. She's in the window watching, and you can kind of imagine wagging this condemning finger. A teacher I know says often, what is not transformed will be transmitted. Whatever it is that is in here, unhealed, will absolutely be projected out there. And I think that's what's happening from the window where Michal is separated from the celebration and she's missing it.
Hello, hello, heaven. Will I hear you whisper to come near?
Did you know that many of the religious professionals in Jesus' day had a pretty big problem with Jesus because of the way he celebrated life? He ate and drank with sinners, they said. He enjoyed himself a little too much, and in their hearts and in their minds, maybe they were a good bit like Michal at this point, and that determined everything that they saw and things that they were thinking about Jesus and certainly what they said. And you shouldn't just be having dinner with these sorts of people, is the way they put it. And I can imagine them maybe going on and saying, if you're going to go there, you at least ought to be preaching to them, prophesying, talking about sin or witnessing or doing something really, really holy. Don't just go there and have a good time. I'm wondering how you pictured Jesus, though. I mean, does Jesus watch from the window? Or is he living his life with all his might before the Lord? Jesus said, "I've come that you might have life." Not just up there and then. Life. Life abundantly. "I've come that you might have life and have it more abundantly. I came to show you how to live." He is the template of the good life. Listen to me carefully. Listen. If you cannot picture Jesus enjoying himself with his friends at a dinner party, if you cannot imagine Jesus living, you may misunderstand his dying. Jesus lived an abundant life, I think, and invites us to do the same. This is why he came, he says, that we might have life and life abundant, and I'm wondering how we're doing with that. How we are, how you are. Are you more like Michael? Are you more like David? I know both of them are within us. They're in our stories, both of these two. There's David out in the street dancing because God is present. Grace from above is co-mingling with what is below. And anywhere that heaven and earth meet is always this moment of incarnational grace. And David enters into it fully. And then there's Michael in the window, watching and preaching about all that's wrong. We know both of these realities. All of us know both of them. We do, and you have. We dance in life. Grace has found us again and again, maybe through just what is joyful and what is deep or what's lovingly sacrificial. Anything that's beautiful, a true friendship, a gift well used, a good nap, any moment of divine commingling that moves us beyond ourselves. We know David's dancing spirit. And we know Michael's too. Watching from the window, comparing, summing up, critiquing, justifying, avoiding, complaining. Is it just a matter of choice? I mean, I want us to ask that question. Is that a matter of choice? Dancing in the street or sitting in the window? Being a part of this grace-filled parade that everyone else is enjoying, or sitting alone with my own unhealed brokenness, watching from a distance? Do we have a choice? I know the choice is not easy for many of us to make. The story does matter. It's hard. But yes, there is always a choice. Grace is always doing this. It's like the hand of God through life and through so many people are always inviting us down to the celebration. The church, those in the church are doing this. You know, the church means, it's ekklesia in the Greek, and that means the called out ones. Called out from what? What is it that we're in? Some window that we're stuck in life, a frame that causes us to see everything this way. And the grace of God goes like this. You all are being called out from that which has you alone in the window. Come down. Come down, won't you? Join the celebration. Know what everyone knows. When grace dances, you should dance too. Amen.